Baker and Brown's NBA Basketball Podcast is back, and I am joined by Billy Broadbent again here due to popular demand, and a brand new guest who has been following the podcast and wanting an episode for a while. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Park. Sam, how you doing?
Good. Excited to join the boys, talk some basketball.
Awesome. So, Billy, I actually have to apologize because usually with guests on the podcast, I ask them questions before kind of we get recording. You've already blitzed through two episodes, so you've jumped the gun. But since we have Sam here as well, I wanted to ask both you guys this question before we get going here. Billy, we'll start with you. What is your team, if you have one, in the NBA, and a player that influenced you to follow basketball, to learn about it more? What intrigued you? What kind of sparked that passion for you?
Well, I've only recently really been into basketball. So growing up, I was never really into it. But the team that I guess you could say I followed was the Detroit Pistons of all teams.
Really?
Yeah. My dad used to do a lot of business in Detroit. And so he'd often go do business trips and come back with a bunch of apparel. And so I'd often have Pistons shirts and hats. And so that was kind of the team I'd rep coming off. I think they had back-to-back championship appearances, so it was a good team to follow back then, and that fizzled out very quickly. And then, yeah, kind of into my later years in middle school, just kind of picked the team that was winning at the time. So Celtics, Lakers, you know, the common teams. And the question was favorite player or influential player. I guess this is a really random player. But one player I was always a fan of for two or three years there, Shane Battier.
Really?
On the Miami Heat. And okay. That was because when I was on my middle school basketball team, I was more of a role player. I didn't see a whole lot of floor time. But this is when the Heat were contenders every year. And Shane Battier was known for coming off the bench. And I think there was one playoff series, or I can't remember against who, but he was kind of lighting up the scoreboard a little bit, and I was like, I want to be that guy. If I'm not going to get a whole lot of minutes, I want to be the guy that seizes the opportunity, kind of the unsung hero. So,
man, you think you know a guy after two episodes on a podcast with him. So I didn't know that at all about Detroit. That's super, super interesting. Sweet, man. Sam.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think a lot of my friends, a lot of people that know me know I'm a pretty diehard Denver Nuggets fan, but before that, how it started was I was born and raised in New Jersey, so New Jersey Nets have always been kind of in my purview. Not really exciting times for me to cheer for them when I was younger, and so I turned the TV on one day. This is going to kind of coincide with the second question that you asked about the player that influenced me. I turned the TV on one day and just happened to watch a Syracuse game, and the player that was playing was Carmelo Anthony. And Nate, if anybody knows me, the player that influenced me the most, my favorite player of all time, is Carmelo Anthony. And, man, that triple threat, it's just poetry in motion, and definitely got me stoked for basketball. It definitely gave me a different perspective in watching the game. And ever since I watched Syracuse make that run with in the NCAA tournament with Carmelo, I vowed I would follow whatever team Carmelo got drafted to till the end of days. And that's how we're here today, boys and girls.
Okay. And just a little bit more about your background. So you're from Wayne, New Jersey.
I'm from Wayne, New Jersey. Yeah.
And I think this is really interesting. Bailey, you probably don't know this about Sam, but Sam went to the YMCA, the same YMCA as Kyrie Irving and Kenneth Reed. So you would see...
Sorry, not Kenneth Reed. Kyle Anderson.
Kyle Anderson.
Spurs.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was
Kenneth Reed.
No, Kenneth Reed went to school in Newark. So it was still in New Jersey. You probably just kind of got mixed up with him coming from Jersey. But no, our local Y actually... So my friend Steph, shout out to Steph Hio of Wayne, New Jersey. He actually trained Kyle Anderson.
Really?
And helped Kyle get in conditioned shape for Summer League before the summer that he got drafted. So it was actually pretty cool. Kyrie, the story with Kyrie is that he played maybe, I think it was like 1 year at the local public high school, and then he transferred to a private school. And so Kyrie was a whisper in the distance.
Not much has changed.
not much has changed, but he was definitely a player that was hyped when I was younger.
Yeah.
But definitely I wasn't a part of that private basketball world, and so definitely didn't get to see any Kyrie games. But
before we move on, yeah, I have a question for you.
Absolutely.
How devastated were you when the Nets moved? And are you, like, do you despise the Nets now? Because they took
the
team?
So I always say this. The Nets will always have a special place in my heart because that's the stadium that gave me $12 basketball tickets. So I was able to, I was actually able to go to basketball games because of the New Jersey Nets. And so I'll always love the Nets. I'll always have a special place for them. I always tell people that they're my second team. I was a little, I was actually, rather than disappointed, I was rather excited for the Nets when they moved to Brooklyn.
Really?
Yeah, because the stadium that they played in, it was Prudential Center.
Okay, same as the Devils.
Same as the Devils. So it's a super old stadium. Not a lot of traffic went through there, so when they went to Brooklyn and got Jay-Z to kind of be the face of the franchise as well, with Roc Nation being involved and Sean Marks being the GM, I believe.
Yeah.
GM. Yeah, so they're a little bit more high profile now.
Yeah.
And I think the move was really beneficial for them, to be honest. And I think, especially now with the addition of Kyrie and KD, I think it'll take that basketball market
to the next level. Really.
To the next level, yeah. It's really interesting to see that a lot of the little brother teams that that share cities with other NBA teams, they're the ones that are kind of coming out ahead with these free agent signings. If you look at the Clippers and the Nets, I definitely, New Jersey Nets, Brooklyn Nets, they definitely have a special place in my heart.
Yeah, interesting, man. That's so cool that you have, you know, like Jamal Murray, like from my hometown. So there's always those hometown kind of heroes.
Yeah, for sure.
It's super cool to have. Thanks, guys. Thanks for sharing. So this episode, we're kind of in a lull right now where free agency is dying down, and I'm sure there's going to be a couple more headlines, you know, as the summer concludes here. But we just kind of wanted to talk about kind of the overall landscape of the NBA, some policy stuff that released today. We also just want to talk about the most anticipated headline as of now, Russell Westbrook. We'll start it off there. Bailey, what are your thoughts on the whole Westbrook fiasco? I know in our last episode, Bailey and I, we talked about it. We touched on a couple different opportunities for Westbrook to be traded. It's looking like Miami has had some traction. But what are your thoughts on that situation right now?
Well, I mean, it's too bad we don't have Kyle here, because I kind of wanted to dive a little bit into the cap and the numbers, I guess, a little bit here. But you know, taking a look at where they stand right now, OKC in across the board compared to the NBA in terms of salary right now, they're kind of right in that top 20 percentile. So even after shedding some salary and trading away Paul George, they're still way up there for next season in terms of money. So we were kind of discussing off the show here, Nate and Sam, how, you know, where is OKC right now, and are they really contenders anymore after trading away George? I think I side with you, Nate. We talked about last show how I think OKC is really going to be looking at shedding a lot of salary, and I think that starts, or at least the next step after trading away George is trading Westbrook. I think that makes the most sense. He's in you know, the year two of a 5-year deal or 4-year with a player option, and there's a lot of money that's going to be owed to him, a max deal. We talked a little bit about suitors as well, which we can dive into later, or we've already kind of covered and touched our bases, but there is that realization that wherever he goes, they're going to have to take on a lot of money. I think it makes sense to trade him, and I think he's played there for 11 seasons now, and so he doesn't owe them anything. You've basically given up on winning. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch. Kind of the final domino to fall, I guess, this offseason.
Yeah, like I said, I think in the last episode, Westbrook just puts his heart out there on the floor. And,
yeah.
You know, he's been with one team his entire NBA tenure, but it is a lot of money. You look at it next year, getting paid $38 million, $41 the following season, $43 in 2021, and then he has a player option that spikes up to $46. It's just a lot of money.
A lot of money.
And talk about a untradeable contract, as Kyle likes to say all the time. It really is untradeable, but there are suitors. And given the circumstances too, I think the organization wants to do him a solid in a sense, because he's given so much to it. Woj tweeted out, when was it? I think today, yesterday, about a little article on Oklahoma City trading Westbrook to Miami. What do you think of that fit, Sam, with
potentially seeing, you know, Westbrook and Jimmy Butler be the face of a franchise in Miami with a relatively young roster and also a lot of pieces going out. And it's going to be a really, really tough task keeping good role players around them because they're spending so much on those two players. They do have some prospective rookies and some young assets. But what are your thoughts initially when you saw that?
Initially, everything inside of me kind of pointed towards saying this is kind of going to be like water and oil mixing together. I don't think that the two necessarily can play together. But after thinking about it a little bit more, the prospect of Westbrook actually being on the Heat, it does intrigue me a lot more because I do actually think with the team, the way that it's constructed right now, with having wings like Justice Winslow and Jimmy Butler at the 2 and 3, mm-hmm. I think it would really allow Russell Westbrook to play the brand of basketball that he's always been playing. And I think if Jimmy's okay with conceding a bit of possession time, I think that team could actually be a very elite defensive team. And I think that they can potentially be middle of the pack offensively because with Westbrook, I think he...
Especially in the East.
And I think he can play very well with Bam Adebayo. He's a rookie that I am a fan of. I think that he does have potential. He obviously needs to get a little bit smarter on the defensive end where he's not committing a lot of fouls, a lot of early mm-hmm. on fouls. But
I think last summer I tweeted something about Bam, and this diehard Miami fan...
Oh my gosh, I remember that.
...started going at us.
Yeah, he went at us. He
was saying that Bam, like, is this crazy good shooter.
Well, they say he was arguing that Bam was arguably the rookie of the year, and I think me and you just kind of took it with stride and just kind of shut him down with, with a little bit of
love. I remember him saying that Spoelstra doesn't play Bam... to his strengths, and he should be shooting threes. I looked at Bam's threes. Mm-hmm. I think Bam shot one NBA three, missed, and one in his pre-NBA career. The thing with that, though, the two players that you mentioned, Justice and Bam, I don't see how they get Westbrook without giving at least one of those guys. I think Justice for sure has to go. The packages that I saw, I don't know, Bailey, if you saw anything, but we talked about it in our last episode. I was kind of saying it'd have to be Olynyk, James Johnson. Those would be the salary.
You got to have the money coming
in. And then the assets, right. It has to be Justice. And then obviously some picks or something like that. I mentioned Derek Jones Jr. as a good asset they might want to keep in this situation.
I wish Kyle was here as well because he is kind of the cap aficionado here. But I think there is a scenario in where Russ isn't... I don't think it's going to be a one for, multiple player type of deal. I think OKC, if they're smart and if they are going to embrace this rebuild, which essentially is what's going to happen if they do decide to trade Westbrook, because on the flip side, arguably when, I agree with Bailey saying that OKC is in a tough position to contend. But I think if they decide to stay with Westbrook, I think that they can be a formidable team. I don't think they're going to be able to compete in the West because the West is just on steroids next year. But I think that lineup, that starting lineup, I don't think it's going to be as brutal as people think. I don't think it's going to be a situation like the Washington Wizards. And so I think in a situation coming back to the Heat, I think the OKC would be very smart to try to get off of Roberson or Steven Adams' contract alongside with the Westbrook contract. So maybe bundling Westbrook and Steven Adams' trade to the Heat where they can absorb those two contracts. I think that'll allow them to hold on to a couple of assets.
Yeah, we're talking a lot of Westbrook trade, pardon me. Mm-hmm. But my question is maybe geared towards you, Nate. Obviously a lot of money owed to Westbrook. Is this an opportunity for a team with cap space or with money to spend like Miami where you're almost getting Westbrook at pennies on the dollar because you have an OKC team that wants to shed salary? Or is it more like is the return for Westbrook really going to be substantial despite that big contract that he is owed? Or is it an opportunity to almost steal a player, at a cheap cost?
It's an anomaly, I think, because they're, like I said, they're trying to do Westbrook a solid, so they're not giving him up for, cents on the dollar. I don't think it's a situation where they're desperate to give him up if he stays. I don't think that's going to affect him at all. I really, I stand by what I said in the last episode. He's going to put his head down and play. But even like Sam, when you bring in Steven Adams, it's just so much money.
Yeah, I feel like you're not going to be able to get.
It's a lot.
Steven Adams is $54 million over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Or something like something crazy.
And I mean,
$25 million this year, $27 million next year. It's
and if you're OKC, I think from what we saw towards the end of the season with Steven Adams, I think they. If I'm Sam Presti, I'm making those phone calls. I'm wanting to get off of Steven Adams because I do owe him a huge chunk of change. And he's only 25, but he looks like he's logged a lot of miles on that body. And he looked like he was kind of crashing down last year. So if I'm a team like Miami, okay, I'll take Bam, send Steven Adams. But if that's the case, then I don't like the trade for the Heat, to be honest. I don't know if they're... if they're going to be in any other situation than the OKC Thunder are currently.
Yeah, it's just such a tough spot for all parties involved because a lot of teams are in need of, you know, a superstar point guard, bring, you know, fans to the stadium, things like that. And it's really looking, a small market team's looking to deal him at to another small market team. But what are your guys' thoughts on Westbrook potentially shock? You know, taking, you know, we had the Kyrie and Kevin Durant saga this offseason. Then we had the Paul George and Kawhi. Do you think that, I don't know how it could be constructible, but do you think that Westbrook could potentially go to a contender next year?
To me, that would make the most sense. I don't know about, diving into it, what teams can take that on.
Yeah, and I was going to say, no one comes to mind.
But it would
have to be in the East, though. Like, all things aside, I think it would have to be in the East. Because I think in the West, the only team that's capable of making... Houston could, but I don't know if that's really going to improve their situation. A Chris Paul for Westbrook swap, I don't know if that's necessarily going to make them contenders.
From a Westbrook standpoint, though, like, why are they trading him? Because they're going to trade him because, well, they might want to shed some salary. But at the same time, they're not going to be contenders next year, and we could debate it, but they're not. And so you almost owe it, and they've kind of, it's been mentioned, or at least in the rumor mill, that they owe it to Westbrook to move him, right? They owe it. He's been there for 11 years. He wants to contend, I imagine. He doesn't want to play for a team that's not going to win, hence the reason why he's going to be moved. So I think if he is moved, he's going to be moved to a contender. He's going to be moved to a team that's has a better chance at winning than OKC, and I don't see him being moved to a team that's rebuilding or that he's the only piece there. And I can't really fathom a move where he's not got a supporting cast, if you will. Otherwise, what's the purpose of moving him? Right, you're not doing him any favors. You might not be doing your team any favors. So
no, they're not going to ship him to Charlotte and say, "Hey, good luck, bud.
Right,
thanks for being so loyal to us." I don't think they're that type of organization.
But I think that brings up an intriguing possibility then too. If you're moving him to a contender, then I think we might see more dominoes fall. Right, like we know 2 weeks ago we wouldn't have thought Westbrook would be on the move, and now he is because of the Paul George trade. And so, will a Westbrook trade equate to yet another star player or another big piece being on the move again?
Yeah, it's really unknown. And I think similar to the Kawhi fiasco, there's not a lot of intel right now. Obviously, Westbrook's camp is quiet. They're probably scrambling and looking at options, what's going to be beneficial. But at the end of the day, if Russ Westbrook is a member of the Thunder next year, I wouldn't be shocked. It's a lot to ask any team to take that on. It's a lot to give up.
Would either of you guys be even a little bit more intrigued if, let's say OKC made a swing and traded Andre Roberson and Steven Adams and let's say 3 first round picks that they accumulated from the Clippers for a Bradley Beal type player? Do you think that would make sense for the OKC Thunder to do that? Do you think that pushes them into contention? Or do you think they're one piece away? Or do you think it's time for them to really make this decision to blow it up?
I said on, I don't know if it was the last episode or the episode before, but there's so much you can pick apart with this Thunder team.
Mm-hmm.
One that you and I know both share is coaching. Maybe it's something like that. I don't think it's as simple as firing Billy Donovan and bringing someone else in, but some of the lineups that he put out, it was really bad. But no, I don't think they're one piece away. I don't, and I think Bailey, you said it really well. They're not a contender. You know, people can debate that they are. They are. No, I don't think so. They'd be lucky to make the playoffs if, you know, Westbrook, even if Westbrook stays. You know, we've seen him carry a team his MVP year. You know, he really did. But I
just wanted to add, though, I think, pardon me, I think that's an intriguing option, though, is, you know, if OKC looks at this situation and goes, we're not going to be able to find a suitor for Westbrook, or the return that we could potentially get for him is not going to suffice for what we think his value is, then, hey, maybe they do go the option of trading away some of those first round picks or other pieces to try to almost replace some of that production that Paul George had last season. Because maybe they think, or maybe Westbrook's camp thinks, you know what, why not try to juice out a couple more seasons here where we can at least remotely contend, we can make the playoffs, and that might be the best option to go. I don't necessarily agree with it, but that might be, from their standpoint, what makes the most sense. Because if you're not going to be able to trade Westbrook, or if you're going to get nothing for him, does that really make your team any better in the long run or the short term? No. So why not try to build your team back up, you know, in some way?
Absolutely. That's enough about that. I think we hit all our bases. It's a very messy situation. I don't know what really is going to transpire. Something that I wanted to talk about with you guys and get your thoughts on is kind of something that's been talked about a lot in the last 3 years, as loyalty has kind of gone out the window, as we talked about in the last episode, Bailey, but the player empowerment era in the NBA. And from a fan perspective, it's really fun, because you get instances where Kawhi Leonard teams up with Paul George. You get instances where Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving get to play together. AD and LeBron, you name it. The list goes on and on of these players over the years. This year it happened to be really three big sets of players. But there's a couple different situations that were reported in the last few days of deals that were signed, or at least quote-unquote closed in free agency, but are now being adjusted because of the player's agent, and also because other teams have more cap space and there's more viable market for them. So, for example, Marcus Morris, you know, signed a deal with the Spurs. What is it, 2 years, $20 million with a player option. But the Knicks all of a sudden have space because they missed out. And now his agent, and I'm sure his camp and himself, are like, oh, I could go play in New York, closer to my home in Philly, for more money. I mean, that seems like a good thing to me. But it's kind of strange, because Jared Weiss, he writes for The Athletic for the Celtics, made a really good point today. There should be some consequence to that, because, in my opinion, because when you have, as a, from a fan, from a player, from a team, it's like, okay, everything happens in free agency. It's all speculation until the team actually tweets out the photo or says, okay, it's official, it happened. So on one hand, yes, you can say, oh, it's not official, you can veer a different direction, there's no issue with that. But then, from the three areas I mentioned, from the fans, the player, and the organization, there's so much that goes into that. There's expectations of what that player is going to be. There's speculating. There's, you know, everyone's kind of now wasting their time, in a sense, if he's going to switch deals, to say, oh, this is what Marcus Morris is going to look like on the Spurs. This is what, you know, this team is going to be. This is what their identity is going to be. And all of a sudden, he changes it to go for more money. One, it's just he's fine either way. He's not playing for, it doesn't seem like he's playing for winning anymore. He's just playing for, I'm not trying to target Marcus Morris. I'm talking about a player who, it comes across to the average fan as greedy.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it seems really unfair. And it seems unfair for a team like the Spurs that, you know, maybe they saw a hole in their lineup. They thought Marcus Morris would be the ideal fit. They offered him a deal, and you know didn't opt to pursue other players because they saw Morris as a perfect fit, and they negotiate a deal with him, they agree upon it, and they think, okay, you know, maybe from their standpoint, we're done negotiating with free agents, we got the player we needed, we filled the hole we needed. And then now you've got Morris who's going, no, hold up, the Knicks have room on their payroll, I might want to sign with them, they can give me more money. And it does seem unfair, because now if he does opt to leave, the Spurs are now, you know, they have an open spot on their roster that could have been filled by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, Morris really pulled a selfish move. And at the same time, my counterpoint to that would be, playing devil's advocate here, is that part of the rules? Like, if he's allowed to opt out, all power to him, right? And so I don't know. I don't know enough about the rules in the NBA to really comment too far on this, but it does seem like a selfish move on Marcus Morris's part.
Yeah, just to comment on that, I think it's important to kind of reflect on the history of the NBA, because we are entering an era of player empowerment, and I don't think, as much as a part of me hates it, a part of me really does not like the idea of a team signing a player to a max contract and that player being able to, in year two, essentially force the team's hand in trading them for, you know, OKC got a treasure trove of assets, but if nobody was going to bite, then what was OKC going to get? A half-assed performance from Paul George all year, right? So I think in that term, it sucks for the teams, but I also think we need to kind of reflect on the times where teams really turn their backs on their players. I think there are so many instances where organizations have failed to show the type of loyalty that they showed to the Kobe Bryants, the Tim Duncans, those type of players, where nowadays, you know what? If I was a player, I would absolutely look to better my career, further my career, because I would first and foremost enjoy the camaraderie amongst playing with the boys. And I think they all have the understanding, hey, like, we won't hold it against you anymore. I think Russell Westbrook being happy for Paul George, well, not happy, but, you know, being okay with Paul George leaving and supporting him in it, I think it really shows kind of a change in the players' mentalities. And I think in the player empowerment era, I think the teams just, at the end of the day, shot themselves in the foot and failed to show the proper franchise players the type of loyalty that they deserved. And I think this is kind of history coming back to bite them in the butt and being like, hey, you could sign a player, but the player is ultimately going to have a decision in where they end up.
I said I was going to pick on Marcus Morris, but we are. Question, though. Say it's not Marcus Morris switching from fringe 9-10 seed, maybe 8 seed San Antonio Spurs to the bottom of the Eastern Conference Knicks. Say, in theory, Kawhi Leonard switched his decision to the Lakers. There would be uproar. There'd be utter chaos. So this is a really tough topic, I think, to kind of process and talk through. But it's going to go under the radar and no one's going to care. And, you know, maybe you're listening right now and you're like, this is stupid. But it's interesting, just the double standard, because if Kawhi did something like that, it'd be another uproar. For sure, like, the NBA PR would be smashed.
Oh, it'd be pandemonium.
Yeah.
It'd be another month or two of content for writers. Yeah,
Damari Carroll, Marcus Morris, and Reggie Bullock, a couple role players moving between two very, you know, not contending teams next year, it's going to fly under the radar. And it's just, I wonder what a consequence would look like. I don't have any concrete ideas right now.
You know what? Like, just to interject, I think, now that I think about it more, now that we're talking about it more, I think I'm becoming a bigger fan of player empowerment. Because, you know what? At the end of the day, if the boys want to play with their friends, I think if they're happier, I think we're going to get a better brand of basketball at the end of the day. And you know what? If we got a chance in today's day to watch the Banana Boat play all together, I think they're going to play a pretty excited brand of basketball. And I think it's especially entering into a time where players are so much more self-aware of their mental health as well. I think it's entering into an interesting space where players are going to be able to kind of play with people that they want to. And I think it might create a better brand of basketball. It might, you know, do this or that, but I choose to look at the positives of it. Yeah. So,
and adding to the whole Marcus Morris thing, we're picking on him, but that's only fair.
I love Marcus Morris. He averaged good numbers. I think like 40 points a game with the Celtics last year. He's a good player.
So it was a 2-year, $20 million deal he agreed upon, with the Spurs. Was it a team option or a player? Okay, player option. So, and the deal or the offer on the table from the Knicks is 1 year and $15 million. So I'm just reading up here. He's made $27 million over his career. So that $15 million over 1 year would be, you know, quite a big deal for him. From his perspective, of course, it does make sense. But again, player empowerment. I think there is too much power in the hands of just the players. And this offseason has been a great example of that. So to see this, and like Nate, as you mentioned with Kawhi Leonard, if this starts happening with higher profile players or teams, you know, closer in being in on the hunt, I guess, for a championship, suddenly this becomes a much bigger deal. And so I think that's why we're talking about it here, is because, you know, if this just lets, you know, if the NBA lets this slide all the time, or doesn't, you know, figure out their rules here surrounding this kind of thing, then, you know, what's really going to happen when this happens to a Kawhi Leonard? Or
right.
This,
so where's the line?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I don't know if it'll get more traction or, you know, and Adam, kind of going to the next topic here with Adam Silver's press conference and, you know, saying there's definitely like ways we need to enforce free agency rules. The other interesting thing that kind of broke today was a new change of rules in the NBA. The flag rule, essentially. It's the board of governors approved a replay center ability for the refs that coaches can initiate. It's not a physical flag as in football, but the challenges that they can challenge are essentially a personal foul charged to a team's a personal foul charged to a coach's team. Wow, I can't read it. A called out-of-bounds violation, goaltending, and basket interference violations. I would say a lot of those are, well, fouls obviously happen all the time. The goaltending and basket interference don't happen a ton. We saw that with DeMarcus Cousins this year in the finals. Out-of-bounds, that's pretty common. My initial reaction, there's no point. The only time it's going to really matter in a game is in the late game. And we're already going to the replay center so fast. All player, and again, player empowerment. As soon as you get two or three players taking their hand in the air, twirling it around, saying replay, replay, they go to the replay center. I've never seen a situation where that hasn't happened late game. And maybe they just want to not have that at just the end of the games and allow coaches to call that no matter what. Maybe, you know, I have a small mind and I'm not thinking of the, you know, long game that an NBA game is. But I don't know. I just don't see the actual point.
I think the NBA just needs to... I just think they need to get better refs at the end of the
day. Yeah.
I think that's what they need to do.
That's fair.
I don't think they need to be changing all these rules, introducing this challenge system. Because like you said, Nate... It really only would make sense if it's allowed in the last 2 minutes of a game, if it has any type of determining factor. But there's so many factors and small plays that go in the game that affect the overall outcome that it just, at the end of the day, becomes a natural part of the game. So I think if it's a missed call here or there, I think if we could have, you know, there are a lot of scenarios where we could be like, what if? Mm-hmm. What if this was the call? But that's kind of the beauty of basketball too, to be able to think about those what ifs. But I think, you know what, NBA needs to stop playing and just get better refs at the end of the day.
I think in some ways though, the better refs argument, it only goes so far. And this is they're obviously employing their best refs. And
of course.
They make mistakes, but they're human.
They're terrible.
And
like playoffs, I'm going to go off for a second. Like, I don't know if you guys want to agree or not, but playoff basketball reffing this past year, I was absolutely disappointed and disgusted with it. I had no idea what I was watching sometimes, especially being a Nuggets fan and going through that whole Portland series. There were calls missed on both ends. Like, don't get me wrong, but there were actually determining factors in the outcome of the game. So that, I think that's why I'm so strongly charged with wanting to get better quality refs.
I feel bad for refs because you never praise a ref after a game. Dang, that ref did a great job calling that game.
Yeah.
But
there is,
and that's great. And I think we should call them out for their mistakes. But is this challenge rule not a good way to start, you know, holding refs accountable and also making sure the right call gets made every play, right? And I think it's only going to only be one challenge per team, I'm assuming. I didn't look at the rules here. Or maybe a successful challenge equates to another challenge opportunity for that team. I'm not sure the nitty-gritty details of this, but I think this is a good job by the NBA to ensure, again, that the right calls are always made, especially in the do-or-die times. We got to remember too, there's more cameras now. Every year there's more cameras, there's more angles, right? People are held more accountable now. and it's easier to see when the wrong call's made. And so,
but I'm also so confused because don't they already?
I think
review the
already
plays?
At least in the final 2 minutes, I believe. Yeah. They do use the review quite heavily, and the one, and again, playing devil's advocate here against the reviews or the challenges,
mm-hmm.
this is going to slow the game down again more. And
which
the last 2 minutes is already just
yeah,
so long.
Exactly, which we don't want in basketball. Are either of you guys, do you guys watch baseball at all?
I do watch baseball.
You watch baseball. Yeah. So when they, it was pretty recent that they introduced replay.
Yeah,
like,
and it's
coaches
it's,
challenge, right?
And the games go a lot longer now. Yeah. And they've had to now enforce other rules to try to shorten the game down because it's getting, there was a 5.5 hour game
a week ago. But also with baseball, previously there was absolutely zero review. Like even if there was like a steal home and let's say the catcher got him out, there was no type of review even in the last top of the ninth or bottom of the ninth. And so I think this really is just going to delay the games even more. And for basketball, a game where already people are frustrated with the last 2 minutes of the game, I don't know if this is going to be good for the game.
I haven't looked too much into this. I just pulled up the official document because I was curious. Yeah. Do you want to say what you're going to say?
Well, I just wanted to add that, again, I haven't looked too far into it, but I know a lot of leagues, and the NHL does this a lot with their development league, the AHL, but they kind of incorporate or test out these rules with those development leagues first, right? And so I'm interested to know if the NBA started this in the D League or the G League, and if it was successful there, or if they're jumping right into the NBA and
probably
trying
jumping right into it. But that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, and I think that would be a good way to try it out and see how it works. And again, I don't know if this has been something that they've done or not. I would think that they would, or at least would have tried it. But again,
they have been on a trial run.
Okay,
in summer league and the G League.
Okay, so maybe it's something that has been working, and they want to. You know what? Why not try it in the NBA now? And see where it goes. And again, this is something to, I'm sure this year it'll have its pros and cons, and it's going to be something that might have to be tweaked, you know, year in and year out. Again, why not try it out and see where it goes? If it has been successful in the G League and has been successful in the Summer League, or has made a positive impact on the game, then why not continue that into the NBA?
This is also really cool that I didn't realize, but there's actually going to be a new courtside administrator that will be stationed at the scorer's table to help make processes quicker by expediting communication between the replay center and officials. The administrator cannot trigger the video replay or make any decisions as far as reffing the game, but they can provide input when the refs come over to the replay center, which I think is interesting. It's kind of a man on the sidelines that's not going to be bias.
Yeah, that's been that's something that in the NHL, I don't want to be that hockey guy always bringing hockey into this podcast, but
I do have one.
There's a lot of fans have called out this last playoffs in the NHL was the worst reffing I've ever seen. I'm gonna go ahead and say it was brutal.
I heard about this too.
There
like
was some
San Jose series,
series shifting calls, and no doubt about it, teams winning when they shouldn't have series. But a lot of fans said, you know, that's something that we need to see in the NHL. Maybe a referee in the stands to be able to see things on the Jumbotron, see what the fans are seeing and know what they're, you know, all uptight about. Because when you're in the heat of the game and these referees, they do miss things and they need to be held accountable. And so I do like the idea in the NBA where you've got a referee or I don't know what they called it officially.
Yeah, courtside administrator.
A courtside administrator to be able to see from a different angle kind of what the fans see.
Yeah, totally. Speaking of administrator, I feel like we've talked about, it's almost like we've been doing admin work for the last 20 minutes or 30 minutes. So appreciate if you've bared with us thus far.
This is good stuff, guys.
Yeah.
This is good content.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
Here.
Great table talk with your in-laws. But talking like more about the players, there's Summer League. Just want to hear you guys' thoughts on, you know, kind of summer league players who you've noticed, who you're excited to see. Kyle and I did a larger episode on this last year, but just wanted to condense it a bit and just hear, you know, who you've kind of been watching, who you noticed, who's caught your eye.
Yeah, no. For me, I think the number one player that kind of caught my attention, because I was a fan of him when he was first drafted, and I thought that the Spurs got a steal out of him, is Lonnie Walker. And he was out primarily with a meniscus tear last year for a big chunk of the season, if not the whole.
He only played in the last couple games.
He played in the last couple games, but in summer league, he's just tearing it. He looks like a man amongst boys. Like, he's scoring at will. He's looking very athletic. He's looking very smooth when he plays. And I'm a fan. I'm very excited to see the Spurs young guards core, play. Yeah, their guards are super exciting.
Kelvin Johnson.
I think DeJounte Murray coming back, I think he's going to make a bigger impact.
DeJounte.
I don't know how to pronounce those names. DeJounte. But also with Derek White's, you know, step taking forward, like his...
Yeah, that one's got to bite.
That one's going to bite me a little bit. But you know what? He messed your boy Jamal up.
Yeah, he did.
But Jamal woke up after that one.
Yeah.
He woke up. But with DeMar and Lonnie, they do have an exciting guard combo where they're going to be able to hold their own in the West, I believe.
Really? So
I think amongst the guards, they probably have, out of the point guard position, probably the toughest... defensive guards in the West, in my opinion. And I think they're gonna give, you know, guards like Steph Curry, Damian Lillard a run for their money when they try to scheme them out of games. But yeah, Lonnie Walker's a big I'm a big fan of him. Also,
I love the Knicks summer league team. Dude,
you really like this guy, eh?
I liked it. What's his name? I'm gonna butcher this. Ignas Brazdeikis.
Yeah, you
from Michigan.
Yeah, you definitely.
He was a second round pick at 17. The Kings went to the Knicks. I like him a lot. RJ
Canadian.
Are you Canadian? Yeah, you're kidding.
Is he Canadian?
He's a Lithuanian born Canadian basketball player.
Oh, so get out of here!
Born in Lithuania, but wow. Grew up in Canada.
That's all the better reason. That's why you're a fan, man.
Yeah. RJ Barrett's been great. I don't think he's surpassed expectations by any means.
No, I personally have not liked what I've seen from
really?
RJ. Personally, yeah. I think he should be like dominating with his scoring right now. For the level of scorer that he's supposed to be in the league, I think that he should be able to get a shot off no problem. I think I don't know if I'm being too hard on him early on in summer league, but I firmly believe that RJ should have been the leading scorer in summer league. And I don't believe he is right now. So I think I had high expectations for his scoring ability, and I just have not been able to see him translate that into summer league play.
Yeah, really exciting player too on the next. Mitchell Robinson, he's obviously a second-year player, but I think he's going to just dominate in full because, well, I don't know what they're going to do with their forward situation. Another thing too, circling back to Marcus Morris.
You mean their six forwards that they signed over the summer?
I was just going to say, we're talking about Marcus Morris going to the Knicks now. They already signed three power forwards.
I don't know what James Dolan is doing. I think he arguably, after Ernie Grunfeld of the Wizards, I think Ernie Grunfeld was actually let go this year, thank God. I think James Dolan is the most inept, worst owner in the league. And I think it's pretty embarrassing what the Knicks are doing right now. And for anybody that thinks that they're contenders, I laugh in your face. I've actually had a couple people try to make arguments with me.
You're not serious.
I think they're contenders.
Bailey.
I just want to see if you'd laugh, and you did. So
I did laugh.
No, I think they signed like three forwards to big money contracts. And I think Mitchell Robinson's... I really hope he doesn't get buried under that lineup because I do think he's talented.
Well, who's gonna play center for them? Don't tell me Taj Gibson's going to go out there.
I could see Julius Randle playing the five.
What?
An inefficient five, yeah.
Really?
I can see. Well, because where are they going to put Bobby Portis?
Dude, Bobby Portis?
He's not that.
Ball.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not that low on Bobby Portis, and I don't see him being a backup to Julius Randle.
I think he'll lead scoring if he gets enough time.
You think so?
On the Knicks. Sorry.
I don't know. I think DSJ is going to have a good scoring.
Oh, yeah. I guess he's kicking
out. Yeah, I think Dennis Smith... I think Kevin Knox, I'm hoping he takes a step forward. He's looked lazy as F in summer league.
Anyways, a couple other summer league players. Carson Edwards on the Celtics. He's been awesome.
That's because you're a homer.
I'm a homer.
You're a homer. Dude, you're going to say Carson Edwards and Taco Fall.
Well, honestly, I don't think I'm as high as Taco Fall because I have no idea how he's going to maintain minutes on NBA in an NBA lineup.
He's not going. He's not going.
How can you? You can't. I'm sorry. Like, I sure fan favorite.
No, he can't. Trust me. My team drafted Bobo. I don't even think he's going to be able to run 6 or 7 minutes.
Bobo can shoot though, and he can actually run.
He can shoot. Well, he can run, but in high school he barely averaged like 18 minutes a game.
Yeah, but he only played 9 games.
Yeah, but
man, me and my buddy Oliver from high school. Shout out to Oliver if you're listening to this. We have been waiting for Bobo to get drafted since the 11th grade. I hope he does well.
You know what? I hope he does well too, because my team drafted him. But
yeah,
whatever. Next player that I kind of wanted to mention that I've noticed has been playing quite well is Kevin Hervey for the OKC Thunder. His numbers aren't, you know, the sexiest things to come off the board, but watching him play, you can tell that he is probably the best player on the Thunder Summer League roster, and I actually do think he's good enough to see game time in the active season. He's a big man who can score on the inside. He can rebound really well, and I think he's great defensively. He's a smart player, and I think we're gonna hear his name quite a bit in the regular season if he does get called up.
Depending on what happens.
Right. But he can kind of slide in that Jeremy Grant role as well.
So. And Tyler Hero, you've been following him.
Oh, big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan of Tyler Hero. I don't know if he's gonna be successful in the league, to be brutally honest with you.
We've mentioned him 2 episodes ago too. I talked on him briefly because I was intrigued. But again, depending on what happens with these last few dominoes with Miami and Oklahoma, etc. I just don't know who's going to play the shooting guard for Miami.
That's a good question.
Exactly. So that's a great question. Maybe they give him the keys.
It'll be
Jimmy Butler's going to whip his ass. So I can tell you that much.
Yeah, it'll be Jimmy. I don't know who the better but question the thing is the point guard.
Well, they're going to play Justice at the point guard. Huh?
Really?
Yeah, they did that at the end. But I think Jimmy should play 3.
Anyways, that's beside the point.
Summer League. Yeah. Another guy, Grayson Allen's been playing good, to be expected.
Not a big
dude, fan. Campaign was balling the other night.
Yeah, but what? Throw another 4-year player in Summer League and he'll show these little boys up. Yeah. Come on.
It just shows, though, too, that Campaign, a guy who was a third string point guard for the Bulls last year, mm-hmm. can go into Summer League and dominate these All-Americans.
Well, yeah, he was a first rounder. He was
really?
Wasn't he? Can you check that? Can you look that up? I think he was like the 20th overall pick or something.
He was 14th pick.
Yeah, he was 14th pick. Campaign was a good player. They always just worried about his shooting ability.
Gosh, his picture looks like a mugshot.
But yeah, last kind of notable player that I want to touch on. I gave this team a lot of crap when they drafted him, but I am liking what I'm seeing from Rui Hachimura on the Washington Wizards.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
Very athletic.
Very athletic. I thought that he wouldn't be able to... I honestly didn't think he would take confident shots in the league. But he's been taking shots, and he's been looking confident with it. Yeah, he's knocking some shots down, and his athleticism is off the charts.
Yeah, he seemed pretty raw from what I saw.
Very.
Another guy, too, on the Japanese team. Yeah, Yuta Watanabe. Dude,
Watanabe.
He can ball in Memphis as well.
He can ball too, yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely a lot of... This rookie class, it wasn't as hyped up. I mean, obviously Zion obviously is out for the rest of summer.
Yeah, it kind of fell off after the top, 7 picks in my opinion.
Yeah, it wasn't as hyped up in my opinion other than Zion, Barrett, sure.
Yeah, but that's also another touch point for you. I just want to get your opinion on it. The value of first round picks now... I think more so teams are more using them to get off of bad contracts than actually looking to draft quality players that make the rotation.
Yeah, it would seem that way. I mean, look at the Paul George transaction.
Yeah, exactly.
First round picks were the majority of the line items that went to the Thunder. So they're definitely a lot valuable, and it's interesting to see that, and maybe
it's also interesting because the talent pool, the talent level of the NBA, in my opinion, is increasing. But I think Summer League, I don't know about you guys, but this year it's been very disappointing. It hasn't been exciting at all to watch, to be brutally honest. For me, I've just kind of been watching players that I have a little affinity for, but and also with Michael Porter being injured, I'm disengaged from Summer League. But yeah, the quality of the Summer League games, in my opinion, they just kind of stunk. And yeah. so I don't know what's going on with that.
Okay. Let's finish up here. Few minutes. Just tell me about the Nuggets. What do you think this season? You brought in Grant, which I know you're a big fan of.
Big fan.
Rescinded Lyles' offer. Yeah. Looks like they're keeping the band together for the majority.
Yeah.
No one, Isaiah Thomas is gone.
Yeah.
That didn't work, obviously. Which you thought was going to work.
You know what? I thought that, I didn't think he was going to be the Isaiah Thomas of Boston, but I thought that he could provide some type of spark off the bench. I didn't think that he was going to be a non-factor on the Nuggets.
He didn't get any playoff minutes.
He got zero, which in my opinion makes sense. If I was Mike Malone, when you're an NBA team on a playoff run, you need to stick to your 8-man rotation, in my opinion. I don't think you could really veer much off of that. I think you need to kind of go in with your guys and figure out rotations within it. But I don't think you can ruin chemistry like that. And I don't think IT is the type of player you plug and play. I think he's just the type of, to be brutally honest, I don't think our play style kind of fit him.
You think they're going to, you were saying before we were recording here, that they're going to be really good in the regular season.
Absolutely. So in my opinion, I think the Clippers and Lakers are definitely contenders for the championship. I would even go on to say that the Clippers are probably going to win the whole thing next year. That's my personal opinion. But I think the regular season record goes to either Denver, Portland, or Utah, one of these teams, just because I think in order for the Clippers and Lakers to be successful in the playoffs, I think they're going to really have to be effective with load management with AD, yeah, LeBron, and Kawhi, and, well, Paul George. You know what? Paul George was a little banged up too, so he might need a bit of load management effectively as well, which I think, in my opinion, leaves the regular season one seed open, and I think Denver can be very competitive in the West next year, especially with the addition of Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He's a good... I liked him a lot. I feel like he just had a kind of a breakout year.
He had a fantastic year. Yeah.
So I really hope he doesn't just get slotted behind Paul Millsap and fall behind in his shadow, or Jokic for that matter.
No, I honestly think... I don't think Jokic has ever played with a player like Jeremy Grant. In the sense that...
A four who can shoot threes?
Well, he's a four who can shoot threes. Who plays within the system of the free-flowing Mike Malone Denver system. Where, he had an athletic four with Kenneth Faried. But Faried couldn't shoot the three, couldn't space the floor. He was bouncy, but he wasn't the smartest player, in my opinion. And I think Jokic is just going to take the next step. Whatever next step it looks like for Jokic, I think he's going to finish top three MVP voting next year.
Okay.
That's my hot take. That's Sammy P's hot take for tonight with Denver Nuggets. But I think Jokic is really going to be able to showcase his playmaking ability next to his, Jamal's scoring ability next year. And I think he's going to really be able to shine with Jeremy Grant slotting in there.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting season for sure. And as this lull finishes, it'll be exciting to see if there's any more.
Come on, we have Michael Porter coming out of the shadows, man.
Okay, calm down.
Hey, I'm hyped about MPJ because if he is a smart player and he chooses to,
he got injured again. Literally just got injured.
You know what? It happens. Injuries happen. I'm not, Steph broke his ankles, what, like 23 times, 20,000 times? He's fine.
MPJ, the next Steph, you heard it here first.
No, MPJ, the next KD, you heard it here first.
All right. Well, I think that'll wrap it up for tonight. Bailey, Sam, thank you so much for coming on. It was good to have you guys and talk some ball. And as we conclude, looking forward to any other headlines that come up. We'll see. We'll probably have to have you guys on again as the season starts. It would be good to see, if any of these takes come into fruition. But thank you guys for your time. Do you have anything to plug?
No, just keep listening to this podcast. This is the place to be, I guess.
And Hockey Podcast Network.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Podnet coming up October.
October.
Yeah.
If you want to give me a quick follow at Samuel J. Park on Twitter, that'd be great. I have some spicy takes there too.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.